This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lynn Mark and Julian Ng. It's 7:35 in the morning, Friday, the 27th of March. And in about half an hour, we're going to be having The Breakfast Grill, where Roshan Kanasan speaks with Alexander Capri, visiting senior fellow at NUS Business School.
So even before the COVID-19 pandemic, global trade was already hanging by a thread due to the US-China trade war, and businesses were already struggling with unpredictable tariffs as well as market volatility. But now they have to face the country lockdowns and travel bans as well as factory closures. So Roshan is going to ask, how will a post-COVID-19 world look for global trade and the global supply chains?
That's going to be a very interesting conversation, and that's going to be happening later on after the 8 o'clock news. And I think all of us are wondering really what a post-COVID-19 world is really going to look like, not just from a global trade perspective, because if we look around the world and to one of our closest neighbours, Indonesia, the COVID-19 pandemic there has so far claimed 78 lives, while over 100 new cases were confirmed yesterday, bringing their total to 893 in the country.
So this is very interesting. Indonesia is such a large country with a humongous population, only has 893, which is slightly less than half of Malaysia's number of cases. And Malaysia is forecasted to rise to about 6,000, if you believe the JP Morgan report. And therefore, it is quite a scary situation for Indonesia, because I think one would just expect that Indonesia's number of cases would surpass that of Malaysia. So the Indonesian government spokesperson, COVID-19 Ahmad Yuryanto, before this has expressed the government's concern that the number of positive cases would rise drastically.
And so far, Indonesia's announced an $8.1 billion stimulus package earlier this month for its economy. But many have noted that it might not be enough, because the stimulus represents only about 0.8% of their GDP. Now, Finance Minister Sri Mulyani Indrawati has previously warned that Indonesia's economic growth could slow to 4.7% this year. So now, for more on the impact of COVID-19 on Indonesia, we have on the line with us Bharat Joshi, Investment Director at Aberdeen Asset Management. Thank you for joining us, Bharat. Now, President Jokowi initiated an $8 billion stimulus package to try and counter the effects of the COVID-19 outbreak. However, considering the number of cases looks to be on the rise in Indonesia, will this amount be sufficient?
So the short answer is, you know, the amount won't be sufficient to counter the economic impact from COVID-19. The country has close to, you know, GDP figures of close to $1 trillion. And if it's the stimulus is 8 to 10 billion, it's only going to be less than 1% of GDP. We have to assume the facts that the GDP for 2020 will fall to about 2.5 to 3% from the previous years of about 5%. So this will mean unemployment in certain sectors will rise as COVID-19 leaves its mark on the country. The saving grace is companies in general in Indonesia are very much domesticated, and they have very little exposures to oil and gas, tourism and travel.
And how have investors reacted to the Indonesian market from COVID-19?
So the short answer, it's been negative, as everything else in the world today. The stock exchange has obviously taken some preventive measures, and this has worked somewhat by limiting the index and falls and stock falls, having stock halting temporarily for 30 minutes, etc. But despite all the measures put in place, the index is among the worst performing market year to date in the region. And I've seen discriminate selling across the board and bargains starting to emerge. Usually in any market correction, there would be four emotional behaviors. And, you know, me living in the market the last 13 years, I've seen close to three. This will be my third correction in the market. And what actually happens is you will have denial. This is when the market is yet to correct. Anger is when the market starts to correct and people are forced selling. And then the third one is depression. So basically, this is where the market is at all-time low, and people are still holding on to their stocks because, you know, they're not keen to sell. And now we're off the lows and we are starting to see bargains start to emerge, and investors which are brave enough are starting to bottom fish.
So the question now is the Indonesian healthcare system robust enough to cater for the prospective rise in cases?
it's you know, the healthcare of Indonesia is actually a joke. So if you look at the population size of about 270 million, it has close to only 400,000 hospital beds in general. And if you look at the doctors, the ratio is even staggering, at about four doctors per population size of about 10,000. And this is quoted from WHO. In terms of ICUs and ventilators, it's even much lower. And so I'm not surprised if the number of cases and the number of deaths will certainly rise. And this is even made even tricky because of the dispersed islands that houses that 217 million population. And as we soon approach the Lebaran holidays, or what we would consider as Hari Raya or Eid at the end of May, it will be a huge exodus of people traveling back for the festivities. So, you know, as you go into the smaller towns, the hospitals are not well equipped to sustain any COVID-19 cases. So I think the government has to step in and be serious on Indonesians not returning back for holidays to prevent the widespread of the virus.
And Indonesia right now has the highest death rate from the virus in Southeast Asia, but hasn't really imposed any kinds of lockdown. What are you expecting on that front?
I think President Jokowi is basically stuck between a rock and a hard place. And here he's made it clear that, you know, the virus needs to be contained and strict measures are being put in place, you know, ensuring that, you know, there's sufficient capex being spent on hospitals to get as much equipment in there as quickly as possible. But he's very adamant against locking down the country. And the reason being is because out of the 270 million population, majority is either mid and low class income earners. And this definitely truly affects, are the first ones to be affected if there's any disruption in the economy. And the clear ramifications, if there's a disorder, this might actually backfire. People might start protesting on the streets. And this is clearly not something you want to encourage. And if there was actually a complete lockdown.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Bharat. That was Bharat Joshi, Investment Director at Aberdeen Asset Management. It's a very interesting take there on the situation in Indonesia. I think, you know, Indonesia reminds me a little bit of India, just in the sense of how many cases, confirmed cases they have in comparison with their large populations. But I guess it makes sense, you know, taking into account what Bharat says about the Indonesian healthcare system, and also the fact that, you know, the number of confirmed cases that you have also is predicated on the number of COVID-19 test kits that are available to the wider community. And I think only recently Indonesia's had an influx of about 800,000 test kits from China, but that also has to be rationed out to cater to the majority of its 270 million population. But Indonesia's not our only neighbour who has been taking measures to mitigate the effects of the coronavirus, because Singapore has also unveiled a landmark 48 billion Sing dollar package to help workers, businesses and households. And it's called the Resilience Budget.
Yes, this $48 billion comes on top of the $6.5 billion support package announced earlier in the budget. Together, the two support packages come up to about 11% of Singapore's GDP. And to fund this resilience budget, the government will be taking $17 billion from the city-state's reserve. The exact amount of Singapore's reserves is apparently a state secret, but we can safely say that Singapore is a very rich country. I mean, if you combine the resources of the government of Singapore Investment Corporation, as well as Temasek, as well as their foreign reserves, I mean, we are talking about trillion, possibly over $1 trillion in funding.
So some highlights of this resilience budget include the fact that wage subsidies have been expanded and extended. So this is under the job support scheme, which was introduced in the February 18th budget speech to help retain local workers. This will be enhanced and extended, bringing the total support to $15.1 billion for just shy of 2 million employees. The qualifying monthly wage ceiling is also going to be raised from $3,600 to $4,600, what is actually the median wage over in Singapore.
So how this works is that the government will co-fund up to a quarter of the first $4,600 of the workers' wage, which is up from 8% announced earlier. So there's a 3x increase in that funding. The aviation and tourism sectors will have naturally 75% of wages supported, while food services will get 50%.
And of course, Lip Seng earlier when we spoke to him, Yap Lim Seng of the Malaysian Association of Hotels also brought this up, saying that, you know, it might be a 60% wage support for the tourism sector may in fact be needed from the Malaysian government to help keep the sector afloat. But in Singapore, monthly cash payouts are also going to be in focus because eligible self-employed Singaporeans will get $1,000 in cash a month for 9 months. And cash payouts for all adult Singaporeans will also be tripled to a range of between $300 and $900 depending on their income. The government has also increased payouts for lower income workers. So the workfare special payment announced on the February 18th budget will be increased to $3,000 in cash for lower income workers.
And the government is also trying to create 10,000 new jobs in emerging areas like the public sector, long-term roles in essential services, and also short-term jobs to handle the COVID-19 crisis. And grants are given to help self-help groups and community development councils. They would receive $20 million over the next 2 years.
So now we've taken a look at the stimulus packages announced by Indonesia as well as Singapore. And up next, we're going to be discussing expectations for our own second stimulus package, which is due to drop later today, with the comments from Professor Nur Ain Sharir, Professor of Economics at Sunway University. So the question is now, will it be as comprehensive as Singapore's resilience budget? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.